This is the Tribune Audio Network.
This is the Backstory Podcast. I'm Larry Potash. On this show, we uncover the backstory behind some of the most intriguing tales in history, culture, science, and religion. Whiskey has been at the center of controversy, corruption, and conversation in America. There are more than 750 whiskey and bourbon distillery businesses in the U.S., growing at a pace of about 15% a year. Dark spirits have made a comeback in no small part because of its backstory. Jim Beam and Jack Daniels may be the most familiar names associated with whiskey, but there are many you don't know who have contributed to the story, both on the savory side and the scandalous side.
We have a variety of different malts here. This is our unpeated mash bill.
25 miles south of Chicago, a distiller is breaking into the increasingly crowded whiskey market. This mid-19th century structure in Thornton, Illinois is vacant when Andrew Howell finds it.
We found these during the renovation process as well.
At the turn of the century, it's a successful brewery. And then comes Prohibition.
At a certain point during a Prohibition era, Capone and the Chicago outfit get involved, kind of commandeer the space, and it becomes a major bootlegging facility.
Let us drink to a further liberation of the American people.
Happy days again.
Once Prohibition is repealed, most mom-and-pop breweries here can't compete with the big brands. But it's the oldest standing brewery in Illinois for a reason. Andrew, what is this place here?
Sure, so this is the limestone-filtered artesian well. This is why we wanted to bring the property back to life right here.
So this is not like if you were getting water from the city, you'd have to pay a water bill. Is this just free water for you?
So they have had access to this water from the 1850s. It's below the building. There's not a meter on it. The water is phenomenal quality for brewing and distilling. So it's really very, very special.
Here is where the magic happens. This is my office. This is where we make all of our whiskey and all of our products.
It's the secret ingredient of Ari Clafter's recipes.
There are thousands of decisions that you make when you're setting up a distillery and figuring out your process, and every one of them has some influence on whiskey's character.
Water, weather, grains, yeast strains, geography. A distiller like Ari Clafter monitors the delicate process.
Human beings have been making alcohol for thousands of years. They say it was likely discovered by accident when people came across fermenting honey or fermenting fruit, but they slowly but surely figured out how to harness all that, even if they didn't understand certain things like yeast pathways the same way that we do now.
Perhaps more important than the ingredients, time.
We're able to run that and turn it into a delicious new make spirit, as we call it. And from there, we'll put it into oak barrels and let it sit for years until it becomes the whiskey that we want. We have some ex-bourbon barrels, some from different cooperages, ex-rye barrels, ex-rum barrels. Going in here, the spirit is completely clear. It looks like vodka. All of that color is coming naturally from time in the wood.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't realize that.
He's not just pouring the contents of a barrel into a bottle. The trick is finding the right blend.
I may be looking for caramel, vanilla, maybe a little bit of molasses notes. Something out of maybe a rye barrel, I would be looking for a really bright spice, a little bit of a grassy note. And putting these together, you get a really complex whiskey. A barrel will essentially tell you when it's ready, and each has a different flavor component that is contributing and making something greater than the sum of its parts.
This is not how whiskey gets its start. Whiskey in colonial America is more like moonshine. So why would anyone drink it? When the colonists clash with England, rum is harder to come by. this is how whiskey emerges in early America. Immigrants bring their knowledge of distilling with them from Scotland, Ireland, and other places. Paul Eggerding is an instructor with Whiskey University in Tennessee.
You can only keep your grains for so long before they go bad. So this was a way to lengthen out the use of the crops that they were growing.
The new nation needs a way to pay for the Revolutionary War. Alexander Hamilton proposes an excise tax on whiskey. It becomes the first taxed domestic product of the new government. The farmers in western Pennsylvania rebel against the tax. The problem? They use whiskey to barter.
It was their currency, exactly. They didn't have money. And so when the tax came in, that had to be paid in currency, that was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back. This is, 45% alcohol. That's, it's a stiff drink.
Chuck Cowdery is a whiskey historian.
They felt like the government in Philadelphia was just as bad as the government in London in terms of not paying any attention to the needs of those settlers far out on the frontier.
President George Washington leads troops to suppress the whiskey rebellion. During the Civil War, whiskey continues to be used as an anesthetic and medicine for everything from measles to sexually transmitted diseases. From medicine to corruption, President Grant is at the center of a scandal that rocks his administration. The whiskey ring of conspirators includes politicians and distillers who use fake labels and funny accounting to pocket tax money.
So those two groups got together and figured out a way to put some of that tax money into their own pockets. It was about collecting the taxes, but not paying the taxes.
More than 100 people are convicted. During the Gilded Age, alcohol taxes and tariffs provide half the revenue of the U.S. government. This is when Peoria, Illinois becomes the whiskey capital of the world. Joseph Greenhut develops the Whiskey Trust, a virtual monopoly.
The trusts were legal. The trusts did a lot of illegal things to fulfill their goals.
But like the, what?
Like forcing people out of business.
Barrel after barrel of prized whiskeys destroyed by government agents.
The monopoly eventually falls apart. When Prohibition is passed, George Remus sees a loophole.
He started out as a pharmacist and then read law and became a lawyer. So he understood how to play this medical exception that had been built into the law.
December 31st, 1921, Remus throws a spectacular New Year's Eve party, much like the one seen in The Great Gatsby.
I'm Gatsby.
Some believe Remus inspired F. Scott Fitzgerald's character, Jay Gatsby, played by Leonardo DiCaprio.
His smile was one of those rare smiles that you may come across four or five times in life.
Others learn from Remus's eventual downfall. Louis Rosensteel keeps a low profile and is one of the few to get the medicinal licenses. He creates the Shenley Corporation.
Shenley, leaders in quality control and research for better living.
One of the big four liquor companies, investigated by the Justice Department in the 1950s for predatory business practices. Rosensteel's plan is to lobby Congress to change laws that help him get rid of his abundant supply of whiskey before it evaporates. And in 1964, the Senate passes a resolution naming bourbon a distinctive product of the United States.
So it looks like patriotism, but it feels more like a power play.
It definitely was more power play than patriotism.
And he made a lot of money in that move?
He did make a lot of money.
And yet, there is no Rosensteel whiskey brand. German-sounding names are not considered marketable for whiskey, especially during World War I. Brands want to remind you of America's frontier.
How important is brand and story to bourbon and whiskey?
Right now, it's probably the most important thing because the general consumer doesn't really know what's in the bottle yet. So the story and brand sell.
And are they true?
Not always. A lot of them are made up. There are bourbons out there with names of people that never even existed, but it sounds like a brawny frontiersman who may have at one point distilled some whiskey.
There is a Terry Bradshaw. He has his name on a bourbon. Bob Dylan has one too.
Most of these celebrity brands, most of these high visibility brands, are overpriced because they're not getting the best whiskey. They're having to put an extra markup on it.
Back at Thornton Distillery, they're still excavating their backstory from the old building that's been home to brewers and bootleggers.
The photos themselves we believe depict Big Jim Colosimo and Johnny Torrio standing in front of the building, sort of like their first day of acquiring a new brewery, maybe a new venture, which would be illegal bootlegging.
Andrew and Ari aren't celebrities, but they have a passion and a good story to tell. What their whiskey tastes like, well, that's up to you. It's all part of the drinking ritual, bringing people together.
It doesn't matter if you're a doctor or a fireman, lawyer or the postal worker, nobody cares because we're all sitting around the table, we're enjoying the whiskey together, and we're talking about the whiskey.
Thanks for listening to Backstory. If you liked what you heard, please take a minute to subscribe to our podcast or leave a review. To watch our full coverage of this story and see some that didn't make it to the podcast, visit us online at wgntv.com/backstory.
This has been a production of the Tribune Audio Network.